Welcome to the Apple Context Machine, a podcast about all things Apple, with your hosts, Jeff Gamet and Brian Chaffin.
Today is August 31st, 2009, and this is the Apple Context Machine, episode number 154, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, Ringo Starr's alternate, just in case. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at AWR, or as I like to say, ACM, at macobserver.com. That's ACM at macobserver.com. Boy, we're really organized today, and it's because we have a guest.
It is, so we're on our best behavior, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
You're hearing the mellow strains of Bob, Dr. Mac Levitis, one of our best friends, and, of course, a longtime columnist for the Mac Observer.
And I think he wrote a book or two.
Yeah, how many books have you written these days, Bob?
50-some, 50-ish.
Yeah, it's more than 50.
54, I think, or 55. I don't know. It depends on how many times you want to count stuff like Mac OS X for Dummies, see? Because I've written that one like 8 times.
Fair enough.
And I've written the iPhone book 3 times. And, you know, it's hard to know what the real number is. But
each one
50-ish.
Counts.
All right, then 55.
55. So I figured you knew. Bob is joining us because we're doing a special show this week for Snow Leopard, and we're throwing in some September 9th media event coverage as well. And Bob has probably more experience with Snow Leopard than just about, well.
How about if we just say Bob has more experience with Snow Leopard than anyone alive? I'm okay with that.
I suspect the Apple engineers would beg to differ.
That
he wrote the book on it.
You did write the book. You wrote Mac OS 10.6 Snow Leopard for Dummies. I believe that's the full title.
Is it? No, there's no 10.6. It just says Mac OS 10 Snow Leopard for Dummies.
Oh, okay. All right.
Bob, I'm laughing because your "is it" is exactly what I've done many times when people have said, "What's the exact title of your book?" And I'll rattle something off and they'll say, "I thought it was this." And I'll go, "Is it?
Is it?" Yeah. Let me go to Amazon.com real quick here.
And we have a link to it in the show notes, of course. That book was published, last week. We covered the announcement on Friday. It's, you know, if you want to learn about Mac OS X, if you want to learn about Snow Leopard, get Bob's book. I love the For Dummies titles, and I think that Bob does this For Dummies thing better than everybody else on the planet, and I have always enjoyed his books.
Oh, you're so kind.
It's a true story, brother. I just absolutely love what you do, especially in the For Dummies series.
Well, thank you from the bottom of my heart.
You know, with an endorsement like that, I don't think there's anything I could do to elaborate on it. So I guess all I can really say is what Brian said.
Well, give us the 2-minute pitch on who this particular book is aimed at, Bob, just in case folks somehow have been living under a rock for the last 20 years.
It's basically designed for somebody that is clueless. You know, it's designed for somebody that absolutely knows nothing about using a computer. Starts out with terminology, and you know, it's something that you could give your grandmother with her first computer, and she would get it. It's a very basic book. There isn't any hacking in it. There's no teaching you how to write macros. In fact, I would say there's a lot left out, because it's not necessary for a novice to know it. It's basically everything that you need to know and nothing that you don't need to know. How about that?
That's fantastic.
I like that. I'm going to have them put that on the cover.
You should. How do you think it's aimed or positioned for switchers, since there are so many switchers these days?
It's a real good resource for switchers. And I teach a class called Intro to Mac, and a lot of my students are coming over from the dark side. And they tend to think that, you know, yeah, the first couple chapters are a little too basic. But beyond that, it's exactly what they need. It's great for switchers. Helps them get familiar with not just the operating system, but the apps that come with it that, you know, we tend to look at as part of the operating system, even though technically they're not, because they're all bundled, you know, iCal and Mail and Safari right. and things like that. So it's a nice way of breaking them in without breaking their hearts.
It makes sense. And I found it, so, like, if you're like a really super advanced user and you're wanting to know like the really subtle and fine advanced points between the differences between Snow Leopard and Leopard, that's not going to be the book for you.
No, but buy that Unix guy's book.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But if your mother is switching, or if you're new to computers, or you know someone that's new to computers, and I realize that a lot of our listeners are not necessarily new to computers.
Most of our listeners, I would say, it's not the right book for, but
they have they
know all of our listeners is. Know somebody. Yeah, all of our listeners know somebody it would be the right book for.
So this is a great option for all of our listeners that want to avoid all of those annoying phone calls they get from friends and families that just got a new computer. Just buy this, hand it off, and it's cheaper than alcohol or therapy.
It is true.
And then don't forget, if that doesn't work, you can just send them to our website. We do remote control tech support.
That's right.
So if you hate doing tech support for your family, just send them our way. We love them.
And you have Pat helping you with that, and she's fantastic.
I do. She is so much better than I'll ever be, and more patient, too.
Yeah,
she's the best.
She is a trooper.
You know, while we're talking about the book, Bob, do you have any like copies we can give away?
Absolutely.
I knew that! What a stroke of luck.
What a stroke of luck.
It just so happens I have a copy sitting here waiting to be autographed and given away to a lucky listener.
Of the Apple Context Machine.
ACM, for short.
So if you will write ACM at MacObserver.com and tell us that you want to enter the contest... It's not a contest. You want to enter to the drawing,
right, the drawing
for a free copy of Mac OS X Snow Leopard for Dummies by Bob, Dr. McLevitis.
It'll even be signed by Bob. And if you need to do handwriting recognition to verify that, well, then you need to be more trusting. But really, it's signed by Bob.
Then you need to get a life.
ACM.
But until then.
ACM at MacObserver.com. Just write us up. Tell us you want to do it. And please, Khalid, one entry per person.
Many will enter, few will win.
You know, it's funny, Khalid, because I know you're listening. He used several email addresses to enter last time, and we stripped out all but one, and he still won.
So it worked, apparently.
So you're telling me these drawings are rigged, right?
No, he still won. We rolled dice. We rolled D&D dice. As a matter of fact, maybe we'll do the same thing in our next show. We'll do the traditional rolling of the D&D dice live on air to pick the name of the winner.
Well, just let me know who to send it to, and I will be happy to take care of that for you.
Fantastic. All right, so that's right, why Bob is with
serious.
Us. Bob has had his hands on Snow Leopard now for months as he's been writing the book, and he's going to give us some of his rants and raves for Snow Leopard, and we're going to sort of give you a state of the Snow Leopard assessment. That's
works,
why we're here.
Works for me.
All righty. Let's get into it.
Yeah, I'm thinking with that introduction, we can, yeah, let's just hop in.
All right. Hop away. Snow Leopard, release Friday. Yay!
Early, as a matter of fact.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
It was early. So let's actually talk about that. So a lot of developers were expecting it in September when Apple said it was going to be released.
Right. And of course, that stands to reason. They were told that's when it would be out, and so that's what they were planning for, which means a few developers have been caught with a little less time to prepare than they had hoped for.
Yeah, for instance, the guys at IceLayer that make iStats are the guys that make menu meters.
Right, and the guys that make mail act on a mail tags.
You know, I'm actually checking IceLayer's site right now.
I've already got their beta. It's working fine. I'm looking at my meters. They're bouncing around as I talk.
Yeah, okay. You need
it's
to go ahead
like
and send that to me.
It's just like the old days.
Buddy.
Mm.
Yeah, can you just send that on over because we both need it?
No.
Good answer.
Because I'm not that kind of guy. But the nice guys at iSlayer, if you ask nice, they will put you on their beta list, and you can have it too. And so far, it's been... I think this is the second beta that I've had. The first one was solid, but apparently had some memory leaks. But this one's been rock solid for like 3 days, 2 days.
Cool. Well, hopefully,
which I mean, in Snow Leopard terms, is a lifetime, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
It is. Do you happen to have a good explanation for why applications like this weren't working?
I think I do. I think in this case, it's because of 64-bit. I believe that all of these things, and you'll notice a little phenomenon when you work with system preference panes. You open a system preference pane, a third-party system preference pane, and you see a little alert that says, system preferences will have to quit and restart now, or something to the words to that effect. What do you think happens? It quits and it restarts itself in 32-bit mode because some of these older system preference panes, non-Apple, weren't written to take advantage of this 64-bit stuff. So my guess is that the menu stuff and system preferences, their compatibility issues have to do with the 64-bit. I'm not positive, but I think that's it. It would make sense since system preference panes seem to have problems, and some of them will work after the app restarts itself, and some of them I don't think will work at all. I've had really good luck, though. I've been surprised. I mean, considering how much stuff is on my Mac, I've only had a handful of things that were incompatible, and only a couple that I couldn't get a beta for that worked. So, I've had really no showstoppers. A bunch of irritating little stuff, but no major issues so far. Which is great, because I remember I went to speak in Chicago a couple years ago, right after Leopard came out, and I got up and I said, it's great, but I wouldn't install it on my system yet if I were you. And we were the user group met at the Apple store, so that went over really well. Anyway, all of the usual upgrade instructions come into play, and in fact, I know that we had a great piece on how to prepare to upgrade, and you should definitely read that before you do it. But you know, I of course recommend a bootable backup if you've got to get back to work fast, so you don't have to worry about restoring anything or copying any files. And I don't think I've heard from anybody that's needed it. Have you?
No,
I haven't heard of anyone either.
Yeah, I think everybody's had an okay experience, and nobody has called me up and said I had to go back.
All of our reader reports and our forum comments and everything, as well as the anecdotal evidence of us and the people we know, the update process has been remarkably smooth. And I mean, like I'm personally am kind of surprised considering the fact that we do have the issue of some apps not technically being ready for Snow Leopard yet, and the fact that there are some rather fundamental differences between Leopard and Snow Leopard. I've just been delighted with how smooth everything has been.
Yeah. Now, yes. Bob, you had mentioned the issues that some audio people are having because of missing drivers, and saying that's the group you would tell not to upgrade right now. And I'm going to add another group to that, which is graphic designers. And that's because I have been, well, when I started doing my research, I found that like Extensis, their font management tools are not OS 10.6 compatible yet, and I'm kind of concerned about people having to deal with font management issues. So yeah, so I'm adding them to your list of don't upgrade yet people.
Speaking of audio issues, by the way, I was rather surprised that my M Audio Fast Track Pro works more or less fine in Snow Leopard. And when I say more or less, it's because it still doesn't work in iChat. But it didn't work in iChat in Leopard either.
That's true.
And you know, our longtime listeners have heard me rant and rave, or mostly rant, about M-Audio's rather lackadaisical support for
drivers.
Yeah, and yes. And I didn't inst-
which is why I'm going in through a preamp instead of my audio interface right now,
which makes sense
because my audio interface didn't seem to be working.
I didn't install anything new for this, and my Fastrack Pro is seemingly working in that you can hear me, and it seems like Logic Pro can hear me too.
Oh.
So,
awesome.
Go figure.
Awesome.
But when we tried to initiate an iChat session between me and Brian, I could hear him, and he couldn't.
Which is new.
Because
it didn't happen in Leopard.
Right, but Brian still couldn't hear me. So yes. We're halfway there. So I'm thinking that when 10.7 Ocelot comes out, that Brian and I will finally be able to do audio iChat again.
I think 10.7 will be Manx.
I was kind of thinking Ocelot, just because... Yeah.
Gee, and I heard Lynx.
I was kidding.
Oh, well. Of course you were.
Right.
Because nobody knows. Well, Steve probably knows.
Yeah, Steve probably does.
But he's not talking.
Well, he's not talking to us.
Yeah, what's
not
up
about
with that?
This. Not about this particular issue.
I did receive a call today from Apple asking if I was going to be attending the event on September 9th. And as usual, I said, I don't know, is Steve sending the Gulfstream for me?
Well, I'll be there for you, Bob.
They said, I'll take that as a no. Yeah, you're representing me. Thanks.
Well, let's jump over to that and talk about the September 9th event, which was long awaited and officially announced today.
And it's interesting because everyone has been talking for, 2 weeks now about Apple's September 9th event? And everyone except Apple, that is.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. The word leaked out somehow.
Yeah. And so now we know that there's some type of music event on September 9th.
There is some type of music event. The image that accompanied the invitation has a woman dancing with an iPod clutched in her fingers. And the tagline for it is, it's only rock and roll, but we like it. Which, of course...
Wait, isn't that a Rolling Stones lyric?
It is. Well, it's a takeoff of
one. Isn't the 9th supposed to be Beatles Day?
Well, it is a Rolling Stones lyric. The Rolling Stones lyric is, it's only rock and roll, but I like it. So it's a takeoff of that. And September 9th is, of course, the day that the Beatles are releasing their digitally remastered catalog in its entirety, as well as the Beatles Rock Band expansion pack.
So does this mean I have to buy all those Beatle records again?
Yes, Bob. It means you have to buy them all again.
And you have to buy them twice, once in mono and once in stereo.
Right. But it's the law, so it's okay.
Exactly. It is the law. So, you know, there's been a lot of speculation that Apple was choosing the 9th because they're going to be announcing the Beatles coming to iTunes finally, the long-awaited appearance of the Beatles on iTunes. But, you know, I got to wonder, picking a Rolling Stones lyric, I got to wonder if the Beatles are not going to be involved in this event.
That's right. If it were a Beatle thing, they would probably have used a lyric like The Long and Winding Road,
you know, with a little
ends on September
9th. With a little help from my friends, or... yeah, I don't know, some other...
How would you like to buy a $250 game? Oh, wait, that's not a Beatle lyric.
Yeah, that's on their special studio cut.
That's on the outtakes, right? Yeah. Right.
I mean, gentlemen, am I making too much of the fact that it's a Stones lyric? I mean,
no, I think that might be a subconscious or less than conscious or less than blatant poke at the Beatles. We'll see. I'll tell you what. We'll know that it was if those remastered Beatle albums don't show up in the iTunes store on the 9th.
Well, Apple doesn't do anything by 10th. Chance. They think out and calculate every move. So the dancer with the iPod with the paraphrased Rolling Stones lyrics, that was all very, very intentional. And once the media event unfolds, then we'll know exactly what they were hinting at with each part of that ad.
Well, okay, so we can assume, first of all, that we're going to get new iPods.
That seems to
say we can assume this. because she has an iPod in her hands, or hand, as the case may be. And we can also assume it because Apple has released new iPods at a September media event for the last 2 or 3 years.
Right.
All right.
Since time immemorial,
yeah,
yes.
At least in the internet age. So, you know, that seems to be a given. And plus, of course, the iPod line is in need of
refreshing.
Of an update. So, yeah. So it's, you know, that's just all, you know, like a no-brainer, duh. And we can also assume that there's probably truth to the rumor that Apple is going to be introducing a new file format for albums that includes liner notes and lyrics.
And possibly video stuff, too. Well, no, that's
and
the whole
possibly
package
video
deal.
Stuff. Yeah, it's something along those lines. But this has been, again, rumored for the last several weeks that Apple was going to be doing this and that they were going to be doing it as a sort of preemptive strike against the labels, which are wanting to introduce their own album format that apparently Apple didn't want to participate in. And again, with the tagline of "It's only rock and roll, but we like it," it does kind of make you think that there's going to be something music related. So I don't know, that to me is a really good bet.
Yeah, I'll agree with you there. And since we can't see a tablet sticking out of her back pocket, as as you so eloquently pointed out in your article, the likelihood that we'll see the mythical tablet made from unicorn tears at this event is pretty slim.
Pretty slim. But you would think that picking the ninth, that the Beatles would be involved. I don't know. With a company that is so careful, as you were saying, Jeff, that is so meticulous about every little single marketing word that comes out, every image, every little thing, they're so careful, so calculated in how they pitch everything. I mean, you know, I could see someone not being aware of the mostly one-sided, on Mick Jagger's part, pseudo-rivalry between the Beatles and the Stones. I could see someone who's completely oblivious of that, just thinking that that's a great tagline, you know, even if the Beatles are going to be involved in this announcement. But I cannot see them using a Stones lyric at an event where the Beatles are going to be part of the event. I just can't. I just don't.
I wish they'd have used "Start Me Up" because it was so successful for Microsoft. I couldn't help it, guys.
Can't always get what you want.
You know, I have missed the way you make me laugh on the podcast.
Thank you, buddy boy. So yeah. I don't know.
So what are they going to do with iPods? Are we going to get a new model, or is just everything getting refreshed? Anybody got any thoughts on this?
Well, I'm expecting the usual stuff, meaning higher capacities. And then as far as this rumor about cameras goes, maybe on the iPod Touch, but I'm not seeing that happening on the rest of the iPod line like some of the rumors are saying. And I'm actually kind of skeptical about a camera on an iPod Touch simply because that blurs the line that much more between the iPhone and iPod Touch.
Yeah, but it's such a it's such a cheap way to add additional life to the product line. And that's really important when it comes to...
And they must have the chipset and the lenses and, you know, all of the components. The price must be... what do they call it? Trending downward?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Which is why I'm not adamant that there won't be cameras. It's just I'm kind of on the fence on that.
And if you look at, take the iPod Classic or the iPod Nano in particular, putting a camera on the iPod Nano could really make that a...
standout device in its price point.
For kids.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it could make it an even more cool device for kids. I think you know, I kind of feel like I sound like I'm a 43-year-old man saying that. But yeah, the kids, they love that camera stuff.
They love that
even
camera.
More so,
get off my lawn.
Even more so on the Touch, though, because of the iPhone apps, and there's so many cool apps for doing stuff to your photos. You know, I think it would be even better. On the Touch.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, the Touch is a little pricey for those kids. It's what they all lust for, but it's not probably what they're all getting.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree with that. I mean, I definitely think it'll be on the Touch. If there's going to be a camera added to an iPod at all, it'll certainly be the Touch. But I just also think that there's probably room for it on the Nano, and maybe even the Nano more than the Classic.
Yeah. Well, and the Classic is also the only hard drive based iPod left in the lineup.
Right.
And it's for people like us with big libraries.
Right. And I can't see that they're willing to kill that line yet, although I think that it's going to become a decreasingly less important part of the iPod line as it goes. I think that the Nano is going to be – the Nano and the Touch are going to become the
flagships.
Yeah, absolutely the flagships. Well, the Touch is the flagship, but I think the Nano is going to be – the number two seller, maybe even the number one seller, and with the Shuffle next and the classics after, you know, way after that. I mean, I would rather have a Classic to carry around my whole collection, but I can almost put it on today's iPhone.
And oh, not me. So I'm happy to have the Classic because that's what I take when I'm going to be away for a long time.
Right, sure.
You know, I can pick and choose what's going on the iPhone. That'll last me a few days. But if I'm going away for a week or two, I like having it all.
Oh, yeah.
Plus, I like having the video cable so I can watch movies in my room. I've got so many movies and TV shows in my iTunes library that I haven't seen yet. It's like I collect the stuff, and then I don't have time to watch it. So it's nice to have it on the iPod, which means I can watch it anywhere, pretty much.
Okay. See, now that's...
And not have to remember to delete stuff and, you know, switch playlists and get rid of stuff that I've watched already and replace it with stuff I haven't seen yet. And it's nice not to have to remember that stuff.
And that's a strong argument for keeping the iPod Classic in the lineup because it does have that substantially higher capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't think it'll go away for anytime soon, but at some point, solid state storage will get to the price point where they can do, a different kind of iPod with 120 gigabytes of storage without a hard disk.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, we're only probably a couple years away from that being not price prohibitive. What's the opposite of price prohibitive? Price allowable. Price in something.
That sounds better than price hibitive.
Price hibitive. Ooh, I like it.
Well, feel free to use it.
Right, so
TM, price-hibitive, TM.
Yeah, cameras bigger, storage, iPod Touch.
They'll keep the colors.
Yeah, well, I bet we get new colors.
New colors.
Well, yeah, but we'll still have color
choices.
Because
I heard that green is brown is the new green, at least when it comes to lawns in Texas.
I'm sure that's so.
Can't you get that green spray paint like they use in California?
I heard they're using that in California. Yeah, we're looking into that, actually. I'm thinking if I'm going to put my house on the market, I want to get those spray paint guys up here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, all right. So
we're down to watering one day a week, you know. It's water rationing.
I'm sure.
Well, we'll see what we can do about making more snow here in Colorado and send some water your way.
Please.
Oh, sure. I'm right on that.
It's the trickle-down effect.
Yes, it trickles right literally down from the mountains to Texas.
So what was the most annoying thing that didn't work in Snow Leopard for you guys?
iStat. It's about the only thing that hasn't worked for me.
I have little niggles. Niggles, I like that. iStat not working has been bothering me. The one that really surprised me about how much it bothered me I didn't have it was Letterbox for mail, and that's a plugin that lets you take mail and put it in three columns as opposed to the column and then the top and bottom panes. And I'm really surprised at how difficult mail is for me to use without Letterbox. Luckily, there's an update on the way, and mail tags. I need my mail tags.
The open and save dialog boxes are really slow, and I don't get it.
Yeah,
it seems to be intermittent though, because sometimes they're spry. They're just, you know, right there, and then sometimes they're so slow I'll launch Activity Monitor to see if the thing's hung or something.
Well, Jeff actually has a theory.
Yeah, my theory is that every time you invoke an open and save dialog box, every storage device connected to your computer has to spin up or wake up, and the operating system is looking at the directories for all of those volumes.
Yeah. Oh, that's terrible for people like me. I've got like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 external volumes.
Yeah, and so you definitely have more than I do, but right now I have 4 different drives connected to my computer, and a couple more that are scattered around just aren't connected right now. And I noticed today as I was doing open and save dialogues, when I would invoke that dialogue, I would hear my drives all start spinning.
Yeah, so that's got to be dealt with.
Yes, because that goes counter to the Snow Leopard makes everything faster rhetoric.
Yeah, especially in that it makes it slower.
Yeah, and you know, I would have to say a lot of the other stuff really is true. Like, for example, I noticed that mail is much, much, much more responsive now. And I've got a giant mail store. I mean, I've got probably 100,000 messages in, you know, several dozen folders. And before, in Leopard, a lot of times clicking on a folder would cause a 5 or 10 or 15 second delay before the list even drew itself. And now it's almost instantaneous, no matter what I do, which really, really makes mail feel snappier.
Yeah, I've got 86,000 mails in my spam filter alone that I should go through at some point. If you've written me and I haven't responded, I'm really sorry.
And odds are you're really low on the mail.
If you're among the 86,000, if you're among the 86,000 listeners who have written to Brian and not gotten an answer yet, he's a little behind on his correspondence.
But mail is almost a night and day difference in how much more responsive it is on just about everything that it's doing. And I actually went through and deleted 10,000. Spams just last night, and that entire process from navigating and sorting and training stuff to be good. I use SpamSieve, which is like one of the most awesome applications ever.
And SpamSieve still works.
SpamSieve does still work, and all of that stuff was just way, 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 way easier to deal with, and that made me really, really happy.
You want to know something cool? I don't know if. I have to check, but I don't know if Activity Monitor used to have a column for the number of threads that were running for each application or process, but the new one in Snow Leopard does, and it's kind of cool to watch, because if there are 15 or 20 of them, they're all executing at once.
Wow.
You know, it's not, there's no waiting. And so seeing the number of threads, I'm looking at it and going, well, that's got to have something to do with how much better this app is responding. And they just, you know, you can watch them grow. Like, Logic is now using like 15 or 20, and it feels so much more spry than it did under Leopard.
Yeah.
You know, things that I used to have to pause for a second or two just happen instantly now. Very cool.
Yeah, I've noticed a lot of apps that I use every day launch substantially quicker than they did. And one of the big improvements I've noticed is in Photoshop. That launches so much faster for me now.
You know, even CS2 launches faster, and I'm doing that through Rosetta.
It
launches way faster. Way, 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 way faster.
You know, I was going to ask you about that, because right now I don't have Rosetta installed, and so I was curious how things would perform for you, but there we go. So that's nice. That means odds are we'll see an improvement in all of Rosetta applications.
Yeah, I would imagine that's the case. Go Live launched faster. Go Live opened my very, 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 very large TMO project substantially faster. So considering the fact that it's completely unsupported at this point, and Adobe certainly isn't going to be updating it for Snow Leopard, since they're not even updating CS3 for Snow Leopard, I was rather delighted with how well it was working.
They're actually going to send you a note that says it's time to become a Dreamweaver user, sir.
You know, if Dreamweaver, if they would incorporate GoLive's project into Dreamweaver, I would use Dreamweaver happily. You know, the last time we talked about this, I got all sorts of notes about people saying that they like Freeway and Dreamweaver. Actually, I think a lot of Go Live people have gone with Freeway. It is not the development environment, because I think Freeway is just a terrific product. It's for doing web design stuff. Freeway's awesome. My interest in Go Live and why I still use it is the project. It's keeping all of my files in a place that I can actually manipulate from within the application rather than using the Finder. And why Adobe doesn't take that from Go Live, which they own, and incorporate it into Dreamweaver is beyond me. I think that they're frickin' numbtards for not doing it. They own it. It is a tremendous asset. And they, you know, Adobe has just pissed away Go Live from the moment that they bought it. Drives me nuts.
Don't hold back, Brian. How do you really feel?
How do you really feel? Yeah.
A little bit tense.
You know, I
yeah. There's an app for that.
You know, it breaks my heart that Go Live died a slow and painful death. I remember meeting the Go Live Cyber Studio team shortly before Adobe snatched up the company. Mm-hmm. And they were so excited, and they had so much drive, and they were so innovative. I mean, what they were doing with Cyber Studio was so far beyond anything anyone else was doing. And it's just sad to see what Go Live ultimately became.
Yep, I completely agree with that.
But that said, that is fracking cool that you're able to run CS2 apps without any problem that we found so far under Rosetta. And
really, what would you have done if you couldn't run Go Live under Snow Leopard? You'd have had to go back to your bootable clone backup.
You know, I was actually dreading having to make that decision on what I was going to. I'd probably actually just start managing my files out of the Finder again.
And, you know, I actually installed it. Yeah, I installed it right on my production machine because I feel like if I'm going to write about this stuff, I need to eat the dog food just like my readers. And, you know, yeah, I could have put it on one of my other hard disks and kind of played with it for a while first. But I don't know that I'd have found all the, you know, interesting little things that I'm noticing had I not put it on my production machine and said, I'm going to just, unless there's a showstopper, I mean, unless I can't use Microsoft Word or something, or Photoshop, I'm going to go with this and, you know, live with the inconveniences and document them all for a column. Yes.
Cool.
A TMO column.
Sweet. Yay.
Yes.
Now, I don't blame you for doing the production machine installation. That's what I did, too, because we're going to find so many little things just from our day-to-day use that we wouldn't pick up on otherwise. And yeah, and that's what I'm doing. I have Snow Leopard installed on my production laptop, and I was just hoping that I wouldn't come across any showstopper issues today when we started working on articles again. And so far I haven't. Just those minor annoyances, the little add-ons that haven't been updated yet.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, writing the book, I always ran it on a different machine. You know, it was starting with alphas and then betas. I certainly don't want to be installing that on production machines. No. So it always lived in a sandbox before Friday.
Right.
But on Friday, I pulled the trigger just like my readers, I guess. And so, you know, if there's going to be pain from it, I'll feel it first.
Yes, and I'm assuming
that's what we do for you. That's what we do for you.
Because we
gentle
love
reader.
All of our gentle readers and listeners.
Yes, we do.
Yes.
Now, Bob, I'm assuming you did the same thing that I did, and I'm assuming Brian did too. Where before you did the installation, you made your bootable backup.
Absolutely, right before.
So,
I mean, like the minute before I inserted the CD. I ran Super Duper again so that I'd have a up to the last second backup, just in case.
No,
I've also turned off the automatic updates on that disk, so if I did have to go back, it's still just the way it was Friday at 10:30.
I of course didn't bother. I've got a backup through a time machine, and that's about it.
So you
could afford to spend 6 hours restoring if you had to, huh? Okay.
I didn't say it was a smart move. I didn't say that anyone. Matter of fact, kids, don't do this at home. Make your bootable backups.
Right. Kids, don't try this at home.
But I've been rather.
These are trained professionals.
That's right.
Or alternately, dumbasses. At least in my case.
Now, Brian, I balance you out at the other end of the spectrum because I created a bootable backup. I made sure that Time Machine ran right before.
Right before.
And yes. I also archived critical, like really critical stuff, like on my email, my calendar, all of that kind of stuff. I archived all that off to DVD right before I did the update as well.
I'll go you one better. I also did a crash plan backup and a retrospect backup.
Okay.
I figure there's no reason not to be redundant with storage this cheap, you know?
That's true. Okay. And my regular data backup ran right before I did the update too. So I had that. Of course, data backup, I think it's this week it's supposed to come out as Snow Leopard compatible. So I'm flying by the seat of my pants without that running right now.
I was thinking, gee, this could be a problem.
It could.
Making a backup with something I'm not sure is going to work tomorrow. But I figured eventually it would, you know, and if I had to, my bootable clone would run it. So
right.
I was pretty confident that I wasn't going to lose any production time, and I didn't. I really. It took about an hour to install.
Bob, which version of macOS or macOS for Dummies shipped with the Power Computing Power 100?
I believe that was
7.5, right?
7.5 or 7. I think it was 7 and then 7.5.
Mine actually came with 7.5, not 7.
Was it Power 100?
It was a Power 100.
Then we started at 7.5 because that was our first machine.
Well, and I ask this because one of the very first things that I knew about Bob, Dr. Maclevitus, was that he was a nut when it came to backups. Because you were advocating that you do daily backups on floppies, and that once a week you take these daily backups to an offsite storage, preferably a safety deposit box at the bank.
I still recommend that. Not floppies, but...
Yeah, Bob fills up the back of his car with floppies and goes to the bank.
No, and you know, I still say the same thing that I said in that book. I say there's only two kinds of Mac users, those who have lost data and those who are going to lose data.
And that's absolutely
true.
Your hard disk is going to crash. It's not a matter of it might. It will. The only question is when.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
You know,
and I'm, by the way, I'm a member of the latter group.
You know, just last week, and Brian, this I'm telling this story for you. You know, just it's just for you. All right. Anyhow, so last week, a friend of mine had the hard drive in her MacBook die, and she was concerned because the hard drive died, but she ended up going over to one of the big box places and bought herself a new hard drive, brings everything over, and I installed it for her because I'm a nice guy, made sure we had OS X reinstalled. And I said, so you did back everything up, right? And with that, she pulls out her desktop hard drive and she goes, here's all my Time Machine stuff. And when OS X booted up, it asked for the Time Machine hookup, we plug it in, it copies all her stuff over, and with that, she was back in business. Everything was exactly as it had been before the crash, except that she had about triple the hard drive space.
Isn't that a delightful thing?
It is, and the smile on her face as everything came back up and all those files that she needed to have were still sitting on her desktop right where she left them. I mean, that is so worth the price of admission right there to whatever backup system you're using.
And if you want to know the alternative, like what happens if you don't have a backup system, go to the DriveSavers website and check out their pricing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Hundreds
Scott
of dollars.
Called me. last week I wrote a column in the Houston Chronicle about backing up and clones and how you know, with a new operating system coming, everybody should be thinking about backups. And Time Machine is great, but is it enough for you? You know, think about whether you have time for that and whether you want all your eggs in one basket. And I said, or do you have a couple $1,000 for Drive Savers? So Scott, the CEO of Drive Savers, calls me up and he goes, thanks for the PR. I said, you don't mind that I, you know, say that you're really expensive? He said, well, you know, I'd rather you didn't, but at least you spell our name right.
You know, and you get what you pay for.
I used to make fun of his Ferrari, but he got rid of it, so I can't really say. You know, why do you think the guy that owns that company drives a Ferrari?
It's because...
It was a great line.
It's because people don't back up. That's
like
why.
A Prius. That's right.
Yeah. And, yes.
And you know, if they weren't great, they wouldn't have all these endorsements from guys like the producers of The Simpsons or Sting or...
Right.
Keith Richards, you know. Now, those guys can afford a few $1,000 to recover their data. Can you?
All right. So we should probably be wrapping this up. I've got a little anecdotal thing here. Since we've been talking, I've deleted 16,000 spams.
Wow.
From my email.
You do know that you can go into preferences and tell it to delete them after a week.
Well, yeah, but then
2 weeks.
You know, I hadn't gone through them yet. I found like 7 things that I needed.
So out of those 86,000 messages that came in, guess what? 7 of you are getting replies now.
Well, no, actually, most of them were just things that I needed as opposed to, I mean, things that like receipts and things that shouldn't have been. Anyway, the point is that it probably takes 10% as much time as it used to.
To delete,
like, say, 2,000 at a time. I mean, it is a remarkable difference. I am on an eight core machine. I've got 10 gigs of RAM. Funny enough, Time Machine is running while it's doing this. So
it's still
that much faster. I didn't even realize Time Machine was running. Huh. All right, so a couple things that we said earlier that we should probably address. We advise two groups of people to not upgrade to Snow Leopard yet. One of them is audio professionals, and the other is designers who are font fanatics or people that where fonts or font management is really, really important. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
All right. Well, yes. We need to follow that up with when should they upgrade?
When their audio interface drivers are out and people are saying yes, and they work too.
Yes.
Okay. Well, let's have, before we get to yours, Jeff, do we have any guesses on how long that's going to take?
Well, it depends. Do you have an M-Audio interface?
Months.
Yeah, that'll be months.
That'll be months.
You may be waiting for a while.
Yeah, they take forever.
Sometimes. And sometimes they don't.
Well, you know, I was using an Eterol interface in between the FireWire 410 from M-Audio and then this FastTrack Pro. And the Eterol interface is supposed to use only Mac OS 10 standard built-in technologies. And it caused me all kinds of kernel panics. I was really, really surprised by that because I had gotten it from a guy who used to do sound driver stuff for Mac OS X that I should use Eterol, and it caused me just nothing but problems. But M-Audio does tend to take sometimes weeks, if not months, to get around to updating their drivers.
Which is unfortunate.
But there are many, many other companies out there, and I think most of them are a little more responsive.
I would just monitor your favorite music-related website. You'll see when people start installing drivers that work.
Or the Mac Observer.
That's true.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, we do have a kind of a music subculture going there, don't we?
We do. We do, as a matter of fact.
And we also have our...
Atomic Love Bombs. Sorry. Little cough there.
Yeah, and we also have our Snow Leopard special report, which people can get at right from the front page, and they can go and see everything we've written about Snow Leopard, which will include the articles where we alert you to updates for audio drivers and things like that too.
You know, since we did our last show, what was that, back in 2007?
Right.
We've also consolidated our forums between and the websites for iPod Observer and the Mac Observer. Everything is one big happy family now. And the new form consolidation makes everything a lot easier to use. And Dave Hamilton and John Braun have co-opted their legions of Mac Geek Gab
geeks,
listeners,
yes,
who are some a lot of really smart people, into helping out with our support forums. So if you've got a question, go to our support forums. It'll make perfect sense what's to do. Just go to the forums, look for the help, the Mac Geek Gab.
Look for the Geek Gab.
Yeah, look for the Geek Gab and ask your question.
That is awesome advice.
Are we giving away a book?
We Ooh. Should give away a book. Before we give away the book, actually, we have to do... Boy, we're just terrible about this. This week's show.
Oh, that's right. We have a sponsor, don't we?
Oh, 53 minutes in, they're getting to the sponsor. Listen to them.
Well, we wanted to make sure everyone stuck around to listen to you, Bob.
Okay.
And
I say that with love.
Who is our sponsor there?
It is, of course, our friends at Smile on My Mac. And this week's episode is Text Expander.
Oh, Text Expander. I love that application. And I'm not saying that because they're our sponsor, but because it's so true. I live in Text Expander every day.
Well, Jeff, tell us what Text Expander does.
Oh, I can do that. All right, Text Expander is this really cool add-on for Mac OS X that lets you create little abbreviations or shortcuts that then automatically expand into full words or phrases, or they can run scripts, they can drop graphics into whatever you're working on, and so you can type a lot less and accomplish a lot more. And so I use this all the time when I need to do things like create special types of URLs, or when I need to send out a standardized response to someone in email, or when I need to send someone all of my contact information, that's stored in Text Expander. And I'm really excited because they just came out with their Text Expander Touch app for the iPhone and iPod Touch. Mm-hmm. And it can sync all of my Text Expander snippets from my Mac over to my iPhone. So all of those things that I might need to dump into a message that I would
or be... Or Twitter.
Yeah. I can just...
Or an SMS message. You can start all of them within Text Expander.
Yes. And then it just pushes the data over to the appropriate application. And it has to work that way because you can't do the whole background thing on the iPhone. But
right,
it's still very cool. And the fact that I can link it back up to Text Expander for the Mac, which saves me just a gazillion keystrokes. There's a thing in there where it'll tell you how many keystrokes it saved you.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And it's very cool. It's a must.
And Text Expander for iPhone is only $1.99.
Totally worth the price.
Totally worth the price. Smile on My Mac, they're good folk.
Yes,
they are good folk, and they've been good to us. We would appreciate it if you were good to them by checking them out, checking out Text Expander for the iPhone and checking out Text Expander for the Mac.
Oh, I have to throw an extra plug in for them. They are going to be at the Mac User Group in Boulder the second Thursday in September. So as we're recording, this will be next week. And they're going to be showing off all the cool stuff they're doing. I think they're going to be showing off Text Expander Touch as well. So if you want to meet them in person, Mac User Group in Boulder next week. I think the URL is comug.com.
Cool. That's awesome. That's great. Go ahead.
All right, and here's the part where I say, if you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to acm@macobserver.com, and remember, succinctness is next to steveliness.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer, and our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly, and the music was recorded by the Atomic Love Bombs.
Those guys rock.
Those guys do rock, and we're gonna close with the
look them up on iTunes, read the reviews, then buy the record.
Yes, please. That's such good advice.
Yes.
And by the way, I'm...
You're welcome, Brian.
Thank you, Bob. You are ever the best. My Twitter account, by the way, is twitter.com/TMOBrian. That's Brian with a Y. Jeff?
My Twitter account is jgamet. That's J-G-A-M-E-T. And Bob, you have a Twitter account too, don't you?
That would be Levitus, L-E-V-I-T-U-S.
Because that's his name.
Well, that's clever.
Because that's my name.
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer. Bob, thanks very much for doing this week's show with us. We appreciate your insight into Snow Leopard.
It's thanks always for having a blast me. Having you it, on.
It was Sorry. A pleasure. Ask me back anytime. This was really fun.
Cool.
Almost like
cool.
having a podcast.
Almost. Very similar.
Except no work for me except sitting in front of a microphone. That's the part I like.
That's true. I understood.
All right. Bye, everyone. Don't forget to write.
I can't see a way out now. I will not go.